Up now is Democracy Now!
Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From the UN Climate Summit in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, this is Democracy Now!
We were asleep and safe. They told us it was a safe area, Rafah and all. But at 20 past 10, they struck it with barrels, destroying all of the block. There were children, women, and martyrs. There is no safe area, neither Rafah nor Khan Yunis nor
Israel
Gaza.
Israel is expanding its air and ground assault on Gaza, killing more than 800 Palestinians since Saturday, bringing the death toll to more than 15,500 people. We'll go to Khan Yunis for the latest. Then climate activists here at COP28 in Dubai staged a protest calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
These last 2 months, we have witnessed not just the Palestinian people starved, trapped, cut off from the world, bombed and killed, their screams echoing throughout the night with no hope of rescue. As every morning, we wait desperately for that message that our friends and our colleagues are still alive. But whilst watching the international community stand in silence...
We'll speak to Asad Raymond about the protests and the UN climate summit so far. Then, for the first time in 9 years, a representative from Human Rights Watch has been allowed access to the United Arab Emirates.
The UAE is a deeply repressive petrostate with a zero-tolerance policy towards dissent. HRW has been deeply concerned for many months over the ability of COP28 participants to freely and safely express their opinions and participate in protests.
All that and more coming up. To Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. We're broadcasting from Dubai, from the UN Climate Summit. I'm Amy Goodman. Gaza's health ministry says Israeli strikes have killed more than 800 people since Saturday, after Israel targeted the besieged Palestinian territory with some of its most violent assaults yet, including parts of southern Gaza previously designated by Israel's military as safe zones. Dozens were killed as Israel flattened homes in the Jabalia refugee camp where displaced families were sheltering. While in Gaza's city, Shujaiya neighborhood, Israeli strikes destroyed 50 residential buildings and homes, killing more than 300 people. Ambulance drivers have been targeted by Israeli snipers, including a medic who was shot transporting an injured person towards Al Auda Hospital. UNICEF spokesperson James Elder delivered this message from inside Gaza's Nasser Hospital.
We cannot see more children with the wounds of war, with the burns, with the shrapnel littering their body, with the broken bones. Inaction by those with influence is allowing the killing of children. This is a war on children.
Clearly, words, clearly pleas from the world do not make a difference on those who have the power to stop the killing, the maiming of children.
We'll speak with a Palestinian reporter outside Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis after headlines. Following the collapse of the temporary truce Friday, Israel continues to restrict the number of aid trucks permitted into the besieged enclave as Gazans continue to plead for food, water, and a permanent end to the attacks.
The days of the truce, God protect us. We slept, we rested. There was no drones and we were living well. But with what happened today, we've been living in fear and anxiety. Really, fear has returned. The sadness has returned. With every explosion, we sprung up. Is it in front of us? Is it behind us? We are living in terror. If anyone has any way to help us, we are dying of starvation.
Over the weekend, Hamas said it would not release any more Israeli hostages until a ceasefire comes into effect and Israel releases all Palestinian prisoners. Meanwhile, top U.S. officials have publicly warned Israel's military about the tens of thousands of Palestinian civilians it has killed. This is Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin.
You see, in this kind of a fight, the center of gravity is the civilian population. And if you drive them into the arms of the enemy, you replace a tactical victory with a strategic defeat.
Austin's warning came as the Wall Street Journal reported the U.S. has supplied Israel with 15,000 bombs, including 2,000-pound bunker busters and 57,000 artillery shells since October 7th. Here in the United States, protesters in critical condition after setting themselves on fire Friday outside the Israeli consulate in Atlanta, Georgia. Authorities said the protester never posed a threat to consular staff, and the self-immolation was believed to be, quote, an act of extreme political protest. In Denver, Colorado, hundreds of Jewish activists and their allies blocked traffic on the busy Spear Boulevard Sunday following a week of protests outside the Colorado Convention Center, where the Jewish National Fund was holding its global conference for Israel. 15 members of Jewish Voice for Peace were arrested after chaining themselves together on the road and halting traffic for an hour. United Auto Workers became the latest and largest union to call for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. The UAW joins the American Postal Workers Union, the California Nurses Association, the Chicago Teachers Union, and others in calling for a ceasefire. The UAW is also creating a divestment and just transition working group and taking a closer look at the union's economic ties to the conflict. The United Nations COP28 Climate Summit opened here in Dubai Thursday, with delegates agreeing to adopt a new loss and damage fund to help poorer nations deal with the disproportionate impact of the climate crisis. Initial funding will start at $429 million, just a fraction of what's needed to address the annual cost of climate catastrophes. Governments from the Global South and climate activists welcomed the fund, but underlined its deficiencies. This is Libyan activist Nissa Beck.
Considering the fact that most of these developing countries that actually need the fund are politically instable, already the prerequisite sort of for receiving the fund is not there.
The loss and damage fund will only be a band-aid if fossil fuel continue to be produced. Loss and damage from climate change cost $1.5 trillion last year alone.
Barbados's Prime Minister, Mia Motley, called for major reforms to global financial institutions and for firm and binding commitments from governments.
We live now in the age of superlatives. And in the age of superlatives, we've seen this year, one-third of the days of the year exceed 1.5 degrees. In Glasgow, I said this was a death sentence. It is a death sentence for many. And the reality is that unless we change course and adopt the policies that can in fact help mitigate that increase in temperatures, we are going to see far more lives lost and far more damage done. I've asked the world simply, let us agree to leave here with a global methane agreement.
A number of world leaders used their time on the global stage to speak out against Israel's assault on Gaza, including South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, Colombian President Gustavo Petro, and Jordanian King Abdullah. Later in the broadcast, we'll hear voices from a protest for Gaza here at the UN Climate Summit. COP28 President Sultan Al-Jaber is facing a new wave of criticism after claiming there's no science backing the phase-out of fossil fuels. Al-Jaber, who also heads the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, ADNOC, made the comments during a virtual panel last month on women and climate change in response to Mary Robinson, former UN Special Envoy for Climate Change and former President of Ireland.
There is no science out there or no scenario out there that says that the phase out of fossil fuel is what's going to achieve 1.5. 1.5 is my North Star.
During the combative exchange with former President Mary Robinson, Al-Jaber repeatedly lashed out defensively and chastised the former Irish president.
The science is very acute now. We don't have any time. They say 6 or 7 years. We've got to peak by 2025, the latest in fossil fuel. Fossil fuel, and your company is investing in a lot more new fossil fuel, and that's going to hurt women.
Ma'am, you've just accused me of something that is not correct. I'm sorry, I don't take it. Now I ask you to prove to me.
I read that your company is investing in a lot more fossil fuel in the future.
Yes, ma'am, you're reading your own media, which is biased and wrong. I am telling you, I am the man in charge, and it is wrong, ma'am. You need to listen to me.
In the lead up to COP28, reports emerged that Al-Jaber was using the event to make oil deals with foreign governments. Al-Jaber rejected the reports. In remarks earlier today, he reiterated what he called his commitment to science, telling reporters here at COP, quote, "We very much believe and respect the science." Venezuelans have approved a voter referendum claiming sovereignty over a disputed area on Venezuela's border with Guyana. The region of Essequibo is roughly 60,000 square miles of mostly dense jungle and is rich in oil and mineral reserves. Venezuela's long-held claim to the land, which it says was stolen when borders between the two nations were drawn by international arbitrators over a century ago when Guyana was still a British colony. Sunday's referendum has heightened fears in Guyana that Venezuela could try to take over Essequibo through annexation. On Friday, the International Court of Justice warned Venezuela against taking any action to assert control over Essequibo. In the Philippines, the Islamic State has claimed responsibility for an explosion during a Catholic mass Sunday that killed 4 people and injured dozens of others. The blast went off inside the gymnasium of Mindanao State University in Marawi, the Philippines' largest Muslim city. A survivor recounted her ordeal.
First, we were singing during the mass, then there was a sudden explosion behind us. We thought it was just the speakers, but then everybody started running. I stumbled, and my friend told me to keep running. That's all I can remember. When I got out of the gym, I fell, and my friend started crying because they saw I was wounded in the back.
In 2017, the Philippines government waged a months-long battle to dislodge ISIS-allied militants in Marawi, laying waste to much of the southern city and killing nearly 1,200 people. Back in the United States, Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman to serve as a U.S. Supreme Court justice, has died at the age of 93. She was appointed by President Reagan, sworn in 1981. She served until 2006. She often acted as a swing vote at the court, including the 1992 landmark case, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which upheld the constitutional right to an abortion. In 2000, Justice O'Connor cast the 5th vote in Bush v. Gore, leading to George W. Bush's election victory. 2.5 years later, Bush led the U.S. into an illegal invasion of Iraq. In 2013, the then-retired Sandra Day O'Connor suggested the Supreme Court should not have taken the Bush v. Gore case. And the House voted on Friday to expel New York Republican George Santos over multiple ethics violations, making him just the 6th Congress member to ever be ousted from the House of Representatives by fellow lawmakers. The bipartisan vote came as Santos is facing a 23-count federal indictment, including fraud related to his campaign finances. He also repeatedly lied about his family, background, and professional experience. Santos's parting words as he left the House building: to hell with this place. A special election is expected to be scheduled in February to fill Santos's seat. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at Gaza. As Israel expands its air and ground assault on the besieged territory days after a truce between Israel and Hamas ended, Palestinian health officials say Israel's killed at least 800 people since Saturday. Here at the UN Climate Summit in Dubai, over 100 protesters gathered on the sidelines of the summit for a peaceful action in solidarity with the people of Palestine, demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. The rally took place across the from the United Arab Emirates Pavilion inside Dubai's Expo City, where the summit's being held. U.S. Climate Envoy John Kerry drove past as the action was starting. Hindered by U.N. restrictions blocking protesters from raising Palestinian flags or naming any specific country, demonstrators held banners with watermelons painted on them, a well-known symbol of the Palestinian movement, as the fruit bears Palestine's national colors, red, black, and green. The UAE bans protests and organized groups, but has allowed some actions during the summit. Protesters were also prohibited from chanting phrases like "from the river to the sea" and "free Palestine." Some still did in defiance. Several wore Palestinian keffiyehs. Dozens of protesters wept as speakers read some of the names of the over 15,000 Palestinians killed by Israeli strikes in Gaza since October 7th, including more than 6,000 children. Democracy Now! Was there.
When human rights are under attack, what do we do?
We'll be reading for you today from the Gaza Ministry of Health a list of names of all those who've been killed since October 7th.
Mu'az Etimad Youssef Dalul, female, a male, 6 years old. Tala Amjad Aryan Abu Ayad, 5 years old.
Elaine Amjad Aryan Abu Ayad, 3 years old. Hamza Muhammad Nahid Al Fassi, 3 years old.
The names are still being written.
My name is Tariq Ludlun. I'm a Gazawi born in Detroit. This violence is not happening just in my hometown of Gaza. It's happening everywhere. Being in Detroit, there are so many situations in which water's been cut off. Being just down the street from Flint, Michigan, we see water be poisoned and polluted for the people and the residents of Flint. And precedents like that, where people are expendable, is only possible because of the violence we see inflicted upon people back in my homeland. And because of that, we are taking the stand here today, not just as Palestinian people, myself, but people who are allied with justice for all people across the world, because that is what is necessary to have true climate justice. What good is finding a world that is green if the roots are soaked in blood? What good is a world that is green if there's nobody left to live in it? The precedent set on people's lives and the calculations we make as to who is expendable, that is the precedent we set for who is expendable anywhere.
Hey ho, take me by the hand. Strong in solidarity we stand. Human rights and justice, human rights and justice. Hey ho, end the apartheid.
Marhaba. Just because now we have social media, we were able to see some of the facts. Have you seen this TikTok that went viral? We know TikToks that goes viral about food. Did you see this TikTok about how you remove white phosphorus from your body? Because white phosphorus weapons are being shelled on people, shelled on civilians, shelled on women and children. And this is where most of the casualties are. Lots of women were, we had almost 50,000 women pregnant trying to deliver at this time of the period. And these women, lots of them lost their lives. And if you have seen also these newborn babies, have you seen them? Have you seen them struggling for air to breathe? But unfortunately, electricity was cut off. They had no food, no water, no sanitation. They had nothing to breathe on. They had nothing to survive on. And lots of these newborn children were killed. And let's be their voices.
A protest You've been listening to a protest that took place yesterday. You've been listening to a protest here at the UN Climate Summit outside the United Arab Emirates in the UN COP. But right now, we will go back to that protest, but right now we have just made a connection with Gaza, and we feel it's absolutely critical to go to it. As the ground assault continues on the besieged territory days after a truce between Israel and Hamas ended, Palestinian health officials say Israel's killed at least 800 people since Saturday, bringing the total death toll to over 15,000. The Gaza Health Ministry official says hospitals are being, quote, flooded with an influx of dead bodies. In Gaza City, a massive Israeli attack leveled about 50 buildings in the neighborhood of Shujaiya, reportedly killing more than 300 people. We're going to turn right now just outside the hospital in Khan Yunis called the Nasser Hospital. There, Gazan journalist Akram al-Sattari is standing. He's going to talk to us about the situation in the south of Gaza, in Khan Yunis, and also talk about his own situation and where his family is living as well. This is Akram.
65 square kilometers, becoming the largest battlefield on Earth. Gaza, 1.8 million people asked to move and leave their homes in the very north in the Gaza Strip, in Gaza City and Gaza Central area, towards the very south of Gaza, to Rafah area. They are being bombarded while they're trying to move. Houses are being destroyed. In the last 24 hours, more than 1,760 people were killed. In the last 12 hours, more than 316 people were killed. The massive movement of the people can be seen for everyone who's moving throughout the different streets of the Gaza Strip. People who are grabbing anything they can take. People who moved from the north to the central Gaza and to the Khan Yunis area. They are grabbing almost everything because they came almost with nothing from the north. And now they're being asked to move to the south because the bombardment is going heavier. And in the south, when they are settling there, the bombardment is resumed and people are killed. In the last 3 or 4 hours, several incidents and several explosions were reported in different areas of the Gaza Strip, inclusive Khan Yunis area, Rafah area to the very south of the Gaza Strip, and Gaza Central area and Gaza City and the north as well. Palestinians who were left with almost nothing, no transportation, no fuel, no energy, no supplies whatsoever. Even the water now is becoming a very scarce commodity in the Gaza Strip. People with all of that facing, or all of that they are facing, are being asked to move. Some of them are walking on foot for such a very long time for the sake of just fleeing to safety. The safety is in very south of Rafah, and when they reach the promised safety, they end up being bombarded. When they reach the promised safety, they lost their deers. They lost the shelter that they are trying to build. I was on my way to Rafah and then back to Khan Yunis area. I was seeing the people who were trying to erect the tents on the two sides of the road. People who were just taking any kind of wood and branches of the trees that they can find, any kind of plastic sheets, any kind of wood to start and do something that can serve them as a shelter. I am already an IDP now, internally displaced person, because my whole area was asked to leave. And I had to leave my home, my apartment, one apartment that I spent a whole time trying to build for me and for my family. And when we're about to leave, we're wondering what can we take and what can we leave, because our capacity to take things is very limited. We started prioritizing medication number one. Medications number one, because they are life-saving. And then blankets, sheets, mattresses, whatever we can get, even the water we were carrying with us, because of the fact that I told you water is a scarce commodity in the Gaza Strip. People who are now in Rafah are facing a very dramatic situation. They don't have supplies, they don't have food, they don't have water, and they are still struggling for the sake of securing any type of living or life in that area. They have been using their children, their mothers, their spouses for the sake of just getting anything that can help them to start fire and to warm some water and to cook something. 1.8 million in Gaza now officially IDPs, internally displaced people. And those 1.8 million people are trying to find somewhere place that they can hide. But the heavy bombardment in the last few days, and the heavy bombardment throughout the whole conflict left no one safe in Gaza. Left no one safe in Gaza because of the large-scale killing resulting from that bombardment. Large-scale devastation resulting from that bombardment and large-scale insecurity resulting from that, as people of Gaza are facing a profound access and security crisis. They have not been able to access anything, and their personal security have been jeopardized by the ongoing devastation and escalation.
Akram al-Sattari reporting to us from Gaza. He's in southern Gaza. He's standing just outside the Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, where he has also, in addition to reporting there, moved his family south. Khan Yunis is a place where the Israeli military originally told people in northern Gaza to move to, and now they are bombing Khan Yunis, where so many hundreds of thousands of Palestinians have moved to Khan Yunis and further south to Rafah. It's extremely difficult to make these conditions, to make these connections, and we thank all of those who have helped us. We're going to turn now to a break. This break are Gazan journalists, Palestinian journalists, who have survived the assault so far, though many have lost family members, singing together.
فننمو إلى رفع كل الهمم للمسير للعلا ومناجاة القمم يا نزول الألم سوف نحيا هنا.
We will stay here until the pain goes away. Journalists in Gaza seen sitting together in their press-identified clothing in a viral video singing, "We will stay here until the pain goes away." More than 60 journalists and media workers have been killed since October 7th, 54 of them Palestinian journalists in Gaza. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We are broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. As we go back to the report that we just were bringing you before Akram brought us his report from Gaza, these are voices of a protest Sunday when over 100 people gathered on the sidelines of the UN Climate Summit for a peaceful action in solidarity with the Palestinian people demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. The rally taking place just across from the United Arab Emirates Pavilion inside Dubai's Expo City, where we are right now, where the summit is being held. These are more voices from that protest.
I come here from the continent of North America representing our indigenous peoples of our Muscogee communities who for many years now we have lived in an occupied state. We were dispossessed of our lands. We were forced upon reservations where we were confined to one area. The water and the resources that we had known for thousands upon thousands of years were taken from us. us and commodified and exploited and stolen from our peoples. Today we come here and I stand here and have been asked to say these words because I stand in solidarity with each one of my relatives here and everything that you're going through, my relatives on these lists here. I'm never going to forget those names that are being said, and one day I will greet them when I join them in the spirit world. But today I want to say something before more violence is incurred, that this has to stop now.
I stand here as a member of Africans Rising, which is a pan-African movement of Africans working for unity, justice, peace, and dignity. Just like Desmond Tutu said, if you're neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. So we are here because we have decided that we shall not be neutral.
Sisters, brothers, solidarity greetings from the global campaign to demand climate justice. Today we stand